It's Tuesday, August 26, 2014, and you're listening to episode 349 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 34 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and that's it. Well, that's not it for my name, but I am the only host here right now. I want to explain the reason for that. As you guys have probably noticed, we haven't had a show for a couple weeks, and I really don't like the idea of leaving the feed dead because I'm afraid it sends the impression that we're in the middle of a pod fade or something. And really all that's happened is we've just had a whole lot of very small incidents simultaneously occur in the lives of pretty much every single host on the show. And, you know, the old saying, it never rains but it pours, and that's basically what happened. I don't want to put names with some of these because I don't have the host permission to start dishing on their personal lives. But like in my case, I was having issues with my throat. One host got a car totaled out. Everybody was fine, but the car was wrecked, so that has kind of messed up their transportation. One host is homesick right now. One's seeing doctors about some possible surgery that might be needed. One's on a job hunt. Several of them are remote, and some of the remote hosts are available, but I think Fear the Boot really works the way it does because that close interaction, the eye contact, the body language, all that stuff, obviously you guys don't get it at home, but for us, it really does help the flow and the energy of the conversation. And I think that an all remote show really loses that, at least for us. I mean, some people can do it wonderfully. Those people are not us. And so I chose to do something kind of odd and just do a solo show. And hopefully this will be the first, last, and only one we ever do. But I'd rather do this than leave the feed dead. I'm going to get a little bit serious here for a second, but I'll be careful where I go with this. Because while, like every human being, I have political and religious views, Fear the Boot as a podcast does not have an official stance on any such topic. But some people have asked if the whole ordeal in Ferguson is affecting any of us. And I appreciate those of you that have asked. For anyone who doesn't understand how the area is set up, St. Louis is really this big, sprawling suburban metropolis. The city itself is relatively small, but the county and also the surrounding counties, because St. Louis City and St. Louis County are actually not part of each other. So both of them are St. Louis, but they're separate political entities. And then there are several other counties that very closely tie into the area socially and economically. And Ferguson, they keep in the news talking about as a town of 21,000 people, which gives you this mental image like there's just this little town out in the middle of farm fields in mid-Missouri, and that's simply not the case. Ferguson is actually a neighborhood or a municipality within St. Louis County. So it's 21,000 people, but they exist within the context of a 3 million person area. Now, for all the problems there, I want to say two things. First of all, none of us, meaning the hosts, personally live or work in the Ferguson area. Now, we do know people that do. And so we're certainly concerned about them, but no host is missing from the show because of an issue related to Ferguson. Secondly, while I'm not going to make any editorial comment on Ferguson, I am going to make an editorial comment on sort of a meta topic, which is being someone that's local and knows people that live and work out there and has pretty close contact with those events. I really don't feel like the national and international news media is doing a good job of capturing the story. To be honest, I think they have a small subset of narratives that they like to play out, and they are trying to cram what's occurring in Ferguson into those narratives. And I think that is only partially true at best. Now, here's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to tell you what to believe about the situation or how to feel about that. That's up to you. But what I am going to say is if you're actually interested in what's going on there, look at the local news sources. Go to like KSDK.com, which is one of the better local news websites, and I'll link a few in the show notes. But check the local news sources because these are people who live in the area. They get the nuance of the situation. They're out there talking to the people. They've been out there talking to the people, and they really understand this and are able to put it in a local narrative, not one of these national socioeconomic archetype stories that they're trying to smash it into. And I suppose one of the things this has gotten me thinking about is if I can look at a story I know and see how they're getting it wrong, then how wrong is all the rest of the media and information I'm being fed? I mean, is it equally out of context, and probably it is, but once again, I don't want to go too far down that road. All right, but let's get back to what we need to talk about. I've got a couple announcements here I'm going to get out of the way real quick that have been piling up over the past few weeks, and then we're going to talk about gaming stuff. And the gaming topic is going to be great because since it is just me, and since what comes off of Fear the Boot is, of course, the one opinion and absolute truth, there's nobody here to argue with me, which means I alone now hold that bully pulpit, and everything I say is unassailably correct. In fact, it could not be more correct if I said it with a British accent. That's the level of truth we're talking about here, so I'm excited about this. All right, but let's hit these announcements real quick. First off, for anyone who is enjoying the XCOM saga, the third XCOM saga has started. You can find that on our blog at feartheboot.com. Now, announcement two ties right into that. Some people were saying they love it, they want to see it. Some people were saying, hey, I like your podcast, but this is just clutter. We want to try and make the site easy to use for everybody. So let me explain some changes we did to the website. If you go directly to feartheboot.com, you will land on a page titled Podcast, which will show you a list of all of our podcast-only entries, so just the podcast episodes. And there's a little rectangular RSS button there along with a one-sentence description at the top that says if you click there, you can get an RSS feed of every show we've ever done from this one all the way back to episode zero. There's also a new tab now that's called Blog. And if you click that, you will see all posts. So the XCOM saga, behind the scenes, con coverage, the podcast, everything's in there together. And it also has a little rectangular RSS button and sentence at the top. And you can click that to get an RSS feed of everything we have ever done all the way back to the beginning of Fear the Boot. Now, you may be wondering, okay, so what about that square RSS icon in the upper right of the site, right alongside our Facebook icon and YouTube icon, all that other stuff? Well, the reason that's there is because a lot of aggregating sites like iTunes will only handle a feed if it's smaller than 512 kilobytes in size. The problem is, Fear the Boot's been around a long time. I mean, we've been doing this podcast now for over 8 years. And so we have a lot more than 512 kilobytes of even just text information. And so what that is that's a stripped down feed that only shows, I believe, our most recent 50 podcasts with no blog content whatsoever, so that things like iTunes will consume and display our show. So if you want a short feed, you can get it from there. But anyway, technical blah, blah, blah. Click around. You should be able to find what you're looking for. If you're still confused, don't hesitate to hit me up via email or on the forums. Tell me what it is you want, and I'll point you to the right place to find it. Third announcement. On September 6th, we are going to be doing a crossover event with Goblin Works, which is the company that's making Pathfinder Online. So for several hours on the evening of Saturday, September 6th, we are going to be hanging out on the Pathfinder Online game, which right now is in its alpha. It's preparing for early enrollment, which is September 15th. And then the game has its open public release on, I believe, January 1st of 2016. So I mean, it's like a year and a half away. But the early enrollment, which will carry over to the main enrollment, they're not going to do a server reset or anything, starts just, I guess, really about a month away now. But on September 6th, we will be hanging out on there with Bonnie Paz, Ryan Dancy, possibly some other folks from Goblin Works or Paizo, doing a great big social meet and greet. Now, obviously, we're going to talk about Pathfinder Online, and you'll be seeing some of the game features. We're going to be running this on Twitch so you can watch what we're doing and you can interact with us. And there will be a voice feed so you can hear us talking to each other. But I want you to know that you can also come talk to us about anything. So if you've got questions about Pathfinder Online, about Fear the Boot, anything that you want to talk about, please stop by, hang out with us, interact. And also, we are going to try and get some of you into the game. They are preparing to give me a pretty good stack of alpha codes that I can hand out to you guys so that our listeners and our community, no matter who you are, watch the Twitch feed and chat with us there, but we'll have at least a good chance of actually being able to download the game client and hang out with us in the game. Now, I don't have those codes just yet, so hang on a little bit until I get them, and I'll be sure to find some kind of relatively fair way to hand them out. I realize there's no perfect way to do these things, but I'll do the best I can. Note that on your calendar, September 6th, 5 p.m. Central, that's 4 Mountain, 3 Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11-ish in Europe, depending on where you are, and Arizona, I have no idea. But I will put a link at least to the Twitch feed in the show notes, and we hope to see a lot of you guys on there then. Final announcement. There's been a discussion going on amongst the people that make RPG podcasts. There are some private discussion areas like on Google Plus and such where we hang out, throw around ideas amongst ourselves. And a conversation was started about whether any of the awards out there right now really do a good job of reflecting what role-playing podcasts do, because many of them we feel either don't quite get what we're about or exactly what it is we offer. And oftentimes we're lumped in with people that are voting on a variety of other things related to tabletop gaming, which is great and all, but these may be people that don't even listen to podcasts or even care about them. They're still hammering out the details, but they want to start a yearly award. And I say they, I should really say we, want to start a yearly award that recognizes podcasting based what we believe is more fairly on its virtues. And they're still hammering out the details for future years, but they decided to do a dry run on it this year where the podcasters themselves would nominate and then vote for who they saw as the best podcasts that are out there. And you were not allowed to nominate or vote for yourself to at least keep this from being, you know, total self-flagellation. And here are the four that won this year. For best new RPG podcast, Numenera, The Signal, won, obviously a Numenera podcast, and I'll link all these in the show notes. Number two is Best RPG Actual Play Podcast, which was won by RPPR, which has had many long ongoing actual plays. Best RPG Industry News Podcast, All Games Considered, another long-running show. And Best RPG Advice Podcast went to Fear the Boot, which I'm certainly very humbled by and thankful for. So I want to thank the folks out there that did that, and once again, I'll link to us in the show notes. All that's done. I apologize for how long that ran, but like I said, having not podcasted for several weeks, I had a great big constipated load of announcements to dump out all at once. I was working on a topic here that I want to kick around that I think I can do pretty well by myself. But in the process of doing it, I started to realize, well, I didn't start to realize this, I've known this for a while. There seems to be nothing that gamers love more than semantic navel gazing. We love to define and redefine and nitpick and dismiss definitions of and so on and so forth every little word in our hobby. I mean, goodness gracious, try to get people to even explain their playstyle in one word and just watch people have a field day on that. Look at the alignment debates. I mean, people trying to even decide exactly what lawful means. It gets obviously pretty crazy. But one of the things that I noticed as I was thinking about this, at least for me, and I don't know how it is for you guys, those kind of semantic debates don't seem to occur within my own gaming group. I really only seem to have them when I come into contact with other gaming groups. And I wonder if that's because, you know, every group of people has its own sort of emergent culture. And the longer that you associate with each other, the more that you start to pick up on each other's mannerisms and colloquialisms and the slang they use and such. And so over time, people start using those words the same way. Chris Hussey commented on this when he said he felt that our use of the word campaign is pretty different from how his gaming group uses that word. And so I'm curious for you guys, do you find, I mean, I know gamers bicker about stupid crap all the time, that's pretty inevitable, but do you find that the biggest and most frequent debates you have over stupid minutia is within your gaming group? Or is when you're at conventions or the game shop or whatever and interacting with other gamers who come from a different little microculture than what you come from? All right, now why is that relevant? Well, what I want to talk about is the modeling of a role-playing game. As we've always talked about, a role-playing game exists in two parts. The role-playing side, assuming the mind of and the role of a person who is not you in a situation you are not in and trying to imagine and work out what that would be like. And then there's the game side. We have rules, we have boundaries, we have numbers. And I think getting back to the semantic navel gazing, you could potentially even argue that some of these rule-less systems aren't actually RPGs. They're just role-playing exercises because they really don't have a game element. Of course, this is going to get people arguing about, well, what does a game mean? You know, does a game have to have rules and numbers, or is simply a social contract sufficient to make a game? Don't really care, to be honest. But if you look at a human being, I think to really describe any person sufficiently would require an enormous amount of work. For example, let's think about the things you know. You know, most role-playing games, they're going to give you 5, 10, maybe 20 skills. But is that really all that you know? I mean, don't you know a little bit about history? Don't you know a little bit about math? Don't you know a little bit about language? Don't you know a little bit about technology, how to drive a car, how to use a screwdriver or a hammer, how to mow your lawn? I mean, we could start to break down the little bits of discrete information you have, movie trivia, and on and on and on. And what I think we would find is that any given person, if we were to talk about what you know in discrete categories, you probably know something about thousands upon thousands of discrete categories. Well, of course, role-playing games can't do that. I mean, some have tried, but you can't have a character book. I mean, it just gets to be too much. I think you do the same thing with attributes. For example, let's say that you have someone who's a runner. Maybe they have very, very strong legs, but maybe their arms, for example, are very atrophied, or in fact have been amputated, or maybe they were born without arms. And so suddenly that strength attribute, which when they're trying to do one thing is very applicable, well, now when they're trying to, let's say, deadlift, well, that becomes a very different kind of role. So maybe you have different kinds of strength. And to subdivide this down all the way would obviously become ridiculous. Just as we could come up with thousands of skills, I could certainly come up with a lot of attributes. And I've noticed that in my own career, as someone who loves to both homebrew and also to endlessly tinker with existing systems, that I've kind of followed the trends within the hobby culture over the years. Because back in the 80s and into the 90s, my solution was, let's add more. You know, I was homebrewing systems that literally had 2 or 3 dozen attributes that had endless lists of skills. If I played a game that was already written, you could be sure that I was going to add something to it. There was going to be another line or two, at least, you were going to have to add to your character sheet to represent something that I felt the game didn't capture, but I wanted captured. And then as I got exposed to games like Savage Worlds and Fate, and there was this push within the RPG community throughout the 2000s towards a more minimalist design, well, I started reflecting that in my own game design. I started saying, well, you know, it really doesn't matter. We don't need to get down to that minutia. Let's just describe, you know, maybe half a dozen attributes and half a dozen skills, and accept that if you've got a good role player, they'll know how to apply those correctly, and we'll generally be able to agree upon when that number is applicable, when it's not, or maybe I'll give you the role, but I'm going to just throw a penalty at you or a bonus at you based on what I know about your character. And hopefully you don't have a super argumentative group that will go along with that. But here's the question that I take this back to. How do you make that decision? What's the right way to handle this in a role-playing game? I mean, I think both extremes are problematic. I think to have the character book, I mean, okay, maybe that works for your group, but for me, that's just not going to work. I don't want to spend 3 days in character creation and half an hour every time I have to make a decision to try and figure out, well, which part of my character does that apply to? On the flip side, I don't like total story games. I mean, I don't want somebody to just tell me based on their feeling whether I succeeded or failed. I feel too hamstrung like that. I feel like I didn't have a chance. I mean, if you've got 4 players at a table, the dice are player number 5 because they get to have a say about the things in the world that nobody controls, even the GM. And I want that element in there. And so I looked at some games like, let's take D&D or Pathfinder. I mean, they use fundamentally the same system, or at least very similar systems. Why, for example, is endurance not broken out from stamina? You see, I could take somebody who's really big and husky, who's very beefy, they've got thick bones. This is somebody where if you wanted to just beat them down, it's going to take a lot of effort. So in that regard, I could say, well, they have a very high endurance, but maybe they can't really run a mile because they're in terrible physical shape. In truth, really, their strength is not all that great, and their endurance taken from that angle is not all that great. And so you could argue, well, maybe there needs to be this additional attribute of strength, endurance, and then stamina. So why doesn't D&D have that? You could say something similar about senses. Within D&D, or Pathfinder, initiative is based upon dexterity, how quick your character is physically. What if your character is a space cadet? There's no attribute specifically for your continuous sensory awareness. But Shadowrun does have an attribute for that, as intuition. And that's specifically one of the uses they give for intuition, is it's your situational awareness. So even if you're not all that accurate physically, so you might have a low dexterity, you still might be quick on the uptake to notice something bad is about to happen and react to it. The question that you have to ask is, first of all, what is the game meant to represent? Let me take a more obvious example. Let's take Shadowrun's essence. For anyone that's not familiar with Shadowrun, it has a character trait. It's really not quite an attribute, though you do roll against it certain times. But this idea of essence describes how human you are, because there's cybernetics and such that are available within the game. And as you start removing the biological components of your body and replacing them with mechanical ones, your ability to interact with the living energies, the magic of the world, gets diminished, because you are more quickly becoming a thing and not a person. You're becoming a what, not a who. And so they have this idea of essence. Well, that's important to Shadowrun, because that's a big part of their world. That dichotomy between magic and technology and all the situations that creates, the two ways of approaching one problem, and the idea that approaching it one way actually hurts you in another and vice versa. Yes, I know in more recent stuff they did kind of introduce cybernetics with Warforged limbs or whatever exactly it was, but the point is, that's not what the game's about. I personally wouldn't even allow that crap in my game, I'm just saying. But that's not what the game's about. Everyone's relationship to magic is assumed, generally speaking, to be pretty fixed. Everybody is part of magic. Magic is everywhere. Magic affects everything. Yes, some people may be more in tune with it than others, but nobody is immune from it. Okay, I'm sure there's some exception to this with this or particular race or that setting, but just play with me on the general field here. But that's not what the game's about, and so it doesn't need to be represented. You know, if I take something like, let's say we had a survival game. Well, in a survival game, I would certainly want to know, for example, how fatigued you are physically. How hungry are you? When was the last time you ate or drank? How many bullets do you have? How far can you run when someone's chasing you before you keel over, gripping your gut and panting? Well, this matters. Well, in D&D, that really doesn't matter. It's not, once again, assuming we're not talking about a specific setting or plot, it's not a game about starvation and scarcity. Okay, Dark Sun is, but Dark Sun, you know what, they had rules for that kind of stuff. And so, in that context, it's really not important to understand how your character, now here's the core point, is distinct from other characters and is distinct in his or her relationship or ability to interact with the world, okay? There's my core thesis here. Your character's distinctiveness from other characters and their distinctiveness and how they can relate to or act upon the world, that distinctness in D&D, let's say on the level of stamina, really is not what that game is trying to show you. Now, it certainly wants to show you that a fighter is stronger and more armored than a wizard, and a wizard can throw a fireball that a fighter can't. But which one can go for a mile without keeling over is really not the primary focus of a D&D game. The second thing is, I think if you start to subdivide these things down too far, it becomes too much for the rule system to handle. Now, I talked earlier about how it may be too much for the person to handle, that I personally don't want a character book. But what I have found is also the more that you add to these games, the less clear it becomes, even in the rules, how things interrelate. You start to notice that, wait a minute, these attributes figure in very heavily to derive traits or certain skill checks, and these don't. And so suddenly you come up with, these are the important ones, and the other 15 pages of attributes are dump stats anyway. Or maybe they're not dump stats, but there's such vagueness in how they're defined, or so much specificity in how they're overdefined, that you end up either constantly swapping one attribute for another, saying, well, I'm going to roll against this instead of that, and here's why, or having these little micro debates about why it should be this attribute or this skill and not that attribute or that skill. When a game designer or a game tinker, such as myself, wants to sit down and say, you know, I'm going to mess with this game, you have to look at that stuff. What's necessary to the game, and what can I clearly define without muddling the game to the point that the players either have been given a new way to cheat the game or really don't even fully understand how to play the game. I mean, look, I'll be honest. If I handed a 25-page character sheet to Chad, I can almost guarantee he'd have somebody else make his character and somebody else tell him what to roll. He probably wouldn't even know what's in there. And so I'm sure he'd be playing a great role because Chad is a good role player, but he would not be playing the game in the least. So here's three questions I came up with that I think you should ask when you are either writing your own game or deciding whether to tinker with an existing game. Question one, what's important to your group? What does your group care about in the stories? Let me give you an example. Let's keep going back to Pathfinder and D&D because it's the go-to game that most people know. For a while, I used to hand out a seventh attribute, and I would have people roll it up the same way they do all their other attributes. And this seventh attribute was luck. Now, what was the purpose of luck? Well, the purpose of luck was if the dice fell and the person did not like how they fell, based on how high or low that luck attribute was, certain things could happen that might influence the situation for or against them. So it was almost a metagame way to influence the dice so you were not always screwed by rolling one or always guaranteed a critical and rolling a 20. Why did I do that? Well, because with the group that I was playing with at the time, that was really important to them. Having some ability to not be completely bound by what the dice say. I mean, sure, they wanted the dice to matter. They wanted the dice to be that fifth player. But there's some times where, man, they're beating your ass. I mean, the dice just are not giving you a break. It's a prison shower. And you're just like, really? Give me something here. And so having that ability to call upon a luck attribute, that was important to them. Now, to your group, it may not be important. You may enjoy the thrill of what the 1 and the 20 do to you. And that's totally cool. But what's important to your group? Does your group want something out of the game that the system isn't giving them? If so, maybe it's time to add a new attribute or skill. Number two, what's the right amount for your group? How much is too much? And how little is too little? I mean, is your group the type of group where if you hand them a hero system character sheet or a Palladium character sheet or even a classic Fastest Star Trek character sheet, which are pretty dense, they're going to look at this and be like, wow, no. I don't want to keep track of this much stuff. This is just, it's too complex. I'm not that mathematically minded. I mean, there's a reason why I wanted to play Fate and not Task Force. Or maybe you've got a group where they love that. They love the detail. And something like the facetious monostat game with your one good number would be, I mean, it'd be almost insulting to them. They'd feel like, what is this? You know, my entire person is boiled down to four, whatever four means. So what's the right amount of math for your group? How much game do they want in a role-playing game? And at what point does the game start to interfere with the role-playing? The third question is, what do you as a game master want the players to focus on? And I realize this is kind of related to question one, but question one was more directed at the players or the group as a whole. This one is specifically directed at the GM. You see, because if you put something on a character sheet, generally speaking, the average player is going to pay attention to it and is going to place an emphasis on it that they wouldn't have otherwise. If, for example, let's say you split an attribute in half, you take dexterity and you turn it into dexterity, which is fine motor skills, sewing, typing, shooting a gun, as opposed to agility, which is gross motor skills, acrobatics, for example. Well, now the players are going to start to see that distinction as important. If you add a completely new attribute, like let's say social reputation, which is different than charisma, this is not how charismatic you are. This is kind of your respect within society. Does society see you as, hey, you're really dashing and handsome and well-spoken and you can sway a crowd, but you're still a wanted criminal. And maybe that level of legality is an important factor to the game. Well, the minute you make them start keeping track of that, that number draws their attention back to that truth again and again and again. It makes them quantify something. And suddenly they start to understand how real it is. Now, yeah, you can capture that through events in the game. If somebody's wanted, if the bounty hunters keep showing up, obviously that's going to get their attention. But numbers are another way of accomplishing this. It's another tool that you can use to get at this. And so what do you want in terms of the feel of your game? Because you can nudge your players in certain directions by putting in new numbers. Now, I'm not suggesting this is the end-all be-all solution. That if you've got a problem in your group, add a number. That is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's one way of doing it. Let me give you an example. Several years back, within one of my older groups, I had a real problem, which was the player detachment from the character. Because you see, getting stabbed in a role-playing game doesn't hurt. Getting stabbed in real life hurts. And since they knew I'm not a killer GM, they would take risks that, simply speaking, were just implausible. So what do I as a game master do about that? Well, I can start giving them consequences, but maybe I don't want those consequences either. If I start killing off their characters, they might start coming in with new characters that are increasingly shallow and throwaway, and that's really not what I want. I want the original group of characters there. These are the people I want in my world. So I don't want that any more than they do. So that's not a good solution for me. Maybe it is for you, but it's not for me. And I also don't want to simply dictate to them, well, your character wouldn't do that, because I'm a big believer in the golden box. I think that a player has one thing in the world, which is their character, and you should not override his or her control of that character. And so I might sometimes kind of raise an eyebrow and say, well, I mean, would you really do that? But if they insist, oh, yeah, I would, and here's my reason why, I don't think personally it's fair of me, and many of my players would freak out if I did this, if I said, no, you wouldn't do that. You're not doing that. Screw you. Next action. I have some players who would rebel at that, and I wouldn't blame them, because I would too. Here's how I got their attention. I made them in several games from different systems add a courage attribute, and I came up with each of these systems a little scale of how tough a courage event was. So if you're a level one character and you want to charge that elder worm because you know I won't kill you or think I won't kill you, then you have to roll courage. Now, the player, at least in my group, once again, right tool for the right job. In my group, this worked out wonderfully, because the players did not see me crossing the golden box, and they also were rolling dice, which they felt like was their action, and they had some kind of control over, even though I guess nobody really has control over a random number generator, but you get my point. It wasn't me dictating that to them. But they understood that because there was a courage attribute, if they had a courage that was really low, when situations like that came up, there's a good chance that just like they wouldn't make a save against a beholder's gaze, they're not going to make a save against my demand for a courage check or a morale check. That instead of charging that dragon, they're going to panic and run the other direction. And that got their attention. And now all of a sudden, people started taking courage more seriously. And they started role-playing that, too. Because when they wrote down that, you know, their character was this or that courageous, just as they were playing that their character is this or that strong or this or that intelligent or this or that charismatic, now suddenly they start thinking, wait, my character's not terribly brave. Or my character's really brave, maybe foolishly brave. And it created some neat role-playing situations where characters would back away from situations that the other group wanted to go into, or a character would charge into a situation that maybe wasn't the best place to be. And yes, I realize that can become disruptive. Once again, tailor this to your group. But anyway, there's the three questions that I have I think you should ask. So I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode, and I did at least a pretty decent job of carrying it by myself. I also really hope that next week I've got my local hosts back. Please send positive vibes, prayers, whatever it is that you want and believe in our way. Because, as I said, none of us are having serious problems. There's nobody that's got like a cancer diagnosis or something like that. But we're just going through a lot of minor things that are occurring simultaneously. It's really throwing us off our game. So please be keeping us in your thoughts. And in the meantime, check the show notes. XCOM Saga, some changes to the website, the Pathfinder Online meet and greet. That's a little bit of a demo, also meet and greet across Twitch, and possibly if you get one of these codes, in-game yourself, and then the RPG awards, all in the show notes. Have a great week and great games, and I will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.